The task that I've been involved with ANID was looking at indicators and monitoring of the new United Nations Convention. Before I get any further, well, the task really focused on looking at examples and ways that we could use those in the work of the European Commission and in the development of monitoring indicators for the future. But in order to do that, it was quite important to look at underlying principles, which I'm going to look at in a second, and some of the problems of measurement and definition that have come up in the past. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time on those two before I look at the examples. Just to repeat, and I'm sure you're all familiar with this, but monitoring the level to which disabled people are able to participate in society and access their human rights on an equal basis with others isn't a new phenomenon. It's something many of us have been concerned with for a long time. But the Convention makes it mandatory. Article 31 requires states to collect statistics and data and research on this subject. And Article 33 requires this to be supervised, this process to be supervised by independent mechanisms within each country. And it'll feed into the reports which each country has to produce under Article 35 every 2 years to explain what it's done to implement the Convention. So looking at the underlying principles of monitoring under the Convention, of which indicators form an important part. First of all, involvement. This is a principle that's already been mentioned today, unsurprisingly. It lies at the heart of the Convention, the need for disabled people and disabled people's organisations to be involved in its implementation and in its monitoring. And that applies to all aspects, including the identification of indicators. So that's going to be an important process issue of involving disabled people in the identification of indicators that we feel will be helpful. Another underlying principle is the need for these indicators that we select to allow us to make comparisons. And comparisons need to be of several different types. We need to be able to make comparisons over time, so we need to be able to assess the extent to which a country has progressed in terms of implementing convention rights, the extent to which disabled people have increased access to the rights set out in the convention, and are able to participate more fully on an equal basis with others. We also, so that also implies that this isn't a one-off event. We need to carry on measuring on an ongoing basis, regular intervals. We also need to be able to make comparisons between the position of disabled people and non-disabled people. And that, again, lies at the heart of the Convention, which the main purpose of which is to allow disabled people to access their rights on an equal basis with others. So we need to be able to make those comparisons to see whether there is a difference in the extent to which disabled people are able to access their rights compared to non-disabled people. And we also need to be able to make comparisons between countries. And that's something that's particularly relevant within the EU. So comparisons are important. Another underlying principle that the Convention points us towards is the need for intersectionality. We need our monitoring methods and our indicators to be designed in such a way that they don't just reveal blanket figures for disabled people, people with impairments, however you want to describe them, us. They need to be designed in a way that will allow us to disaggregate the information we collect, to identify how different rights are accessed by people with different types of impairment, for instance, or by people who are disabled and women, or people who are disabled and of a particular ethnicity. So we need subtle mechanisms which will allow that type of disaggregation, so we can look for particular aspects of multiple disadvantage that may crop up. Okay, so those are the three underlying principles I've picked out: involvement, comparability, and intersectionality. Moving on to look at two issues of issues of definition and measurement. The first is about disabled people. And as any of you involved in monitoring will realise, this is a really complex issue. It's a complex issue as well, just in terms of terminology, because people use the term disability in so many different ways. Looking at the convention, Article 1 of the convention, although it doesn't define disability, it does provide us some guidance about what disabled people, the term disabled people does include. And it's quite a broad approach, according to which people with different types of impairment will be disabled if those impairments in conjunction with social barriers cause them to be able to access their rights on a lesser basis than others. So that's one thing we need to be careful of when we're thinking about implementing the convention in our national systems. Does our national system define disability in a sufficiently expansive way? We need to be sure that we're measuring the impact of the convention on disabled people, not just some disabled people. Another issue is the fact that whatever terminology we use, we're not going to be able to escape the need to identify people who have a disability or an impairment or a functional limitation, because it's the impact of social barriers or other barriers on them that we're interested in. So we need to know who they are and whether those barriers are being effectively removed. And there are issues around identifying who those people are. That there's some work that's gone on in the Washington group already, but we probably need more sophisticated we definitely need more sophisticated mechanisms. And self-reporting of levels of impairment, or whether you have an impairment or a disability, is notoriously variable as well. So we're probably not going to be able to produce a very precise system. There will be some inconsistencies that we're not going to be able to escape, but we can do our very best to recognise where they might be and take steps to try and minimise them. Another issue about measurement is the measurement of barriers, which is what the convention is really directing us to do, to look at the effect of social barriers in all their guises on people with impairments or disabilities. And these barriers might be physical barriers, there might be information barriers, accessing information in different formats or languages, there might be attitudinal barriers, or there might be support barriers, barriers created by the fact that there isn't adequate support, maybe for decision making for people with intellectual impairments, or support for parenting. So that's another type of barrier, I think, that needs to be measured. All those types of barrier need to be looked at, and we need ways of measuring their impact. So turning now to examples, Now, there were lots of examples that we looked at, and I have to apologise, there may be some people in the room who provided us with very useful information whose specific work I haven't highlighted here because of time. And also, I think these examples are only drawn from international monitoring projects, but there are some very useful monitoring exercises going on at national level, which are mentioned in the report more fully. Okay, so looking at the international examples, first of all, I've put there the global survey on the implementation of the standard rules, which was conducted by the Special Rapporteur a couple of years ago. This was a survey which involved sending questionnaires to all the governments of countries that had adopted the standard rules and asking them whether they had adopted specified legal and policy measures. And questionnaires were also sent to disability organisations. But the basis of the report was self-reporting by governments about what they had done. And the results are interesting, but they don't go into the effectiveness of those measures. They're simply looking at whether governments have taken the legal and policy measures required by the standard rules. And part of its function, I should say, wasn't simply to monitor, it was also to raise awareness amongst those governments of the steps they needed to take. The next example I want to look at is the IDRM, the International Disability Rights Monitor, and if anybody would like more information, then please speak to Mary Keogh. this is a project that was set up in 2003, I think, because of the recognition that there wasn't enough information about the extent to which disabled people were able to enjoy their rights in practice. It's impossible to describe all its work in the time allotted, and it's described in more detail in the report. But it doesn't just look... It does look at legal and policy measures, but it's not confined to them. It doesn't just take the yes-no approach. It looks at the effectiveness of those measures as judged by disabled people. Disabled people are used as the researchers in the IDRM projects. Thank you. Okay, and the next... And they've carried out studies on Europe, the Americas and Asia to date. The DRPI, the Disability Rights Promotion International Project, was set up about the same time to develop mechanisms, sustainable mechanisms for monitoring. And it's at a stage of its work at the moment where it hasn't yet published those guides. We're awaiting those guides with bated breath. It has produced a report which it worked on in Kenya as almost a pilot study, which is a very useful report. And it looks again at legal and policy measures using the knowledge of law schools. And then it also looks at personal experience, which it gathers through interviews conducted by disabled people. And it looks at the effect of the media and the presentation of disability in the media. The final one was the Mental Disability Advocacy Centre, which carried out a series of reports on guardianship, which again looks at the implementation of legal and policy measures, but in a much more detailed way than the global survey, the first one I mentioned. And it's carried out through independent lawyers rather than through self-reporting by governments. So just to sum up, types of indicator that emerge from these reports. First of all, indicators measuring the adoption of legal and policy measures, and that can be through government self-reporting, which performs other functions as well, or it can be through independent experts, and policy experts, as well as law experts, have an important role to play there, as do disabled people themselves. Also, indicators designed to measure the disability gap, the difference between the participation of disabled and non-disabled people, and the barriers which disabled people continue to face. And I think the personal experience of disabled people and the attitudes of the public.